This is Ozarks at Large. Art may be in the eye of the beholder, but comprehension of a work of art can become greater the more information you have. Rachel DeLue spends much of her time finding out more about art and then sharing her knowledge. She's an associate professor in the Princeton Department of Art and Archaeology, and late last month she was in Northwest Arkansas to participate in the annual meeting of the Southern Intellectual History Circle, which came to Arkansas for the first time ever. Rachel DeLue has written several books on art, including studies of the landscape artist George Ennis and American abstract painter Arthur Dove. She spoke on the University of Arkansas campus and at Crystal Bridges during her visit in February, and she also came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk to me about art, appreciation, and the topic of one of her talks while here, the problem and promise of a Southern art history.
There isn't really such a thing as Southern art history at present. Our field dates to around 1830, although it really came of age in the 1960s and 70s. And when it came of age, there was no real consideration of art in the South. The folks writing about it, the collections that were being written about were based in the Northeast. And so American art history has been a history of New York and New England. So there has always been a possibility of a Southern art history. There are exhibitions here and there, publications here and there, but there aren't scholars working in a sustained fashion on the art of the South. So there's a real possibility to look at this material and incorporate it into larger histories of American art. But there are also problems associated with that. And those problems have very much to do with the idea of the Southern as a category.
Exactly, yeah. What does that mean?
Well, that's the question. What does Southern mean? Is it geographical? Is it cultural? Is it historical? Is an artist who is born in the South Southern, even though he or she works in New York City? Is art with Southern subject matter considered Southern art? The question is, how does one define it? So in order to produce a Southern art history, one has to figure out what one's objects of inquiry are. And the problem with the category of Southern is that it can circumscribe a field incorrectly or ahistorically, by which I mean it can include people who might not belong or exclude folks who really demand to be understood as Southern artists. And again, it's a question of, in a sense, segregating a whole cohort of makers who, of course, have relationships to the so-called North and to Europe and to the rest of the world. So to pigeonhole those folks as Southern artists in a way that we don't do with other artists. You would never call the 19th century American landscape painter Thomas Cole a Northern landscape painter. So those are some of the perils or problems associated with the question.
Well, then just getting the definition sounds difficult. It's almost as if before you can start the serious scholarship in that category, just how will we define it? And can you?
Absolutely. I think the answer to the question, can you define it, is resoundingly no. but I think there is value in making the effort, if only because there is a huge history of art, a widespread range of artistic practices characteristic of or at least located in the South that haven't been attended to by scholars of American art history. And so our sense of the field is a pretty narrow one given that.
And it's interesting because in music, the public can identify, if you say Southern music, there's Cajun, there's Hank Williams, there's – but if you ask most of us in the public Southern art, most of us, I think, when we walk into a museum and we're viewing something, we may know Thomas Hart Benton is from Kansas City, but most of what we see, we don't know where they're from.
No.
And there may not be anything on that canvas that indicates, oh – this is a lap steel, in other words.
That's exactly right. And so the question is, does the subject matter need to be recognizably Southern? And I think scholars of the South have tended to focus on writing because writers in the South, Faulkner, Welty, et cetera, write about the South. But artists in the South don't necessarily make art about the South. And the question is, does an abstract painting with absolutely no reference to anything Southern count as Southern art? Some would say yes, some would say no. And so it is exactly the problem of definition that has, I think, prevented, for good reason, a wholesale jump into the notion of a Southern art history.
Yeah. If there are some of us who want to think about Southern art, are we just shortchanging the whole idea of scholarship by trying to put the definition on? Should we just think about art?
I think so. I mean, I think the question is very similar to the question one would ask about African American art. And so the category African American art assumes that African American art exists in relation to, say, American art. And so American art, which might be defined as art by European descended or white people, is the norm, and African American art is a category that sits next to it. And that means that when we talk about an American artist, or we make an exhibition of African American art, we are demanding that those artists be seen in terms of their identity, which means that the art part of the work might be ignored or left out or given short shrift. The same goes for Southern art. If we choose the lens of the South or Southernness through which to look at this art, we may not see certain things about that art that are absolutely important, that the artist wanted to be there. The artist may not want the art to be understood as Southern in the same way that an African American artist might not want his or her art to be understood as African American in content.
The conversation we're having and the papers and conversations you have at conferences, whether it's at Crystal Bridges, whether you've gone to Russia to talk about Cezanne, these are conversations that don't happen for most people when they're in a museum. I'd say, I'm going to pull out a number, 95-98% of people who go through and appreciate art aren't thinking about it like this. What would you like those of us who are not art scholars to think about, or is that even something you think about, when we're looking at art?
Well, I think first and foremost, I would like any visitor, including myself and my students, to spend some time simply looking at a work of art without being preconditioned by information, wall labels, textual description. But then I want that visitor to have access to information about the subject matter of the work, about the biography of the artist. I would like there to be information about how scholars have described and understood these works of art. So I imagine in various venues, texts, wall labels, audio guides, digital apps, the visitor having access to exactly what information he or she might want in order to illuminate the work of art. But I think that any visitor should be able to know as much as I do about a work of art and then can choose how to understand that work of art. I really feel that there's a fine line between dictating what the visitor understands about a work of art and letting the visitor experience that work of art himself or herself. But I do think that most people who don't have expertise in the field of art history can feel somewhat lost in a museum, simply because he or she doesn't necessarily know why and isn't told why what's on view is important and why he or she should be looking at that stuff. So even the simple gesture of saying this is important because, or we chose to put it on the wall because, can really help the viewer develop a relationship, a substantial relationship to what he or she is seeing.
And the context. I mean, there are so many paintings from previous centuries where when I hear the description and the symbolism, they were almost editorial cartoons. People at the time knew what was being and when you get that information, you can appreciate it
absolutely
more.
Yeah. So one thing that artists did in the 19th century for their viewers was offer what I would call a key. So artists would actually make a key, so sketch the painting in outline form and label it and decode it for the viewer. And these pamphlets would circulate for viewers, so viewers would have access to what the artist's intentions and what these hidden symbolisms were all about. I would love to do that for viewers in museums. I mean, genre painting, which refers to painting of everyday life in the 1830s and 1840s, is full of colloquial references and allusions to vernacular speech, ways of speaking that we have no access to today. And that kind of painting can't be understood unless somebody is made to understand that there are jokes and plays on words happening in the picture. So even something as simple as a key would really help, I think, in the museum context.
You've been a consultant to museums and collections. When you're a consultant, are you – how does that work? Do they say, would this work with the collection, or do we have a gaping hole here that would help tell the story?
I think acquisitions is part of it. So museums have collections and are always wanting to build those collections. And the first question any museum asks, and this is the question that I'm asked to think about, is how can we best tell the story of the history of American art? And I'm often brought in to advise the museum about how to tell the story. Well, you have a lot of work by artists from the Northeast. How about work from other regions, the Midwest, the South, the Far West? And that's a whole other question. California art is a similar possibility and problem. The other questions have to do with public programming. How can we make this art accessible to our various publics? How do we translate academic scholarship into a kind of knowledge that is accessible for the public? And how do we produce programming that will draw viewers in but also bring the art to life for those viewers? So those are some of the things that I talk about with museums. And it's been wonderful for me because as a scholar, I can find myself alone in my office thinking extremely elaborate thoughts. And when I'm forced to think about how museums speak to their publics, it reflects back on my own work and reminds me that my own work absolutely has to speak to general audiences, or why write it?
Well, you mentioned the word accessibility, and I think of art often much like poetry or classical music. People don't want to even approach it because they think they're not going to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin to lose if people won't even try
that
to see or hear the work.
That's right. So there has to be a way in. There has to be some kind of a hook. And this is something that I think about a lot as a teacher. Students come to my classes some of them have never been to a museum or spent time looking for an extended period at a work of art. And it's a different way of seeing. We don't walk around in our everyday lives spending 20 minutes looking meticulously at the bark of a tree. This is what we do in a museum. We spend 20 minutes looking meticulously at a painting. And so the first thing I do with my students is help them understand what that kind of looking entails and what the way of seeing of an art historian is. And that's the first step toward access, to understand that each of us does have the capacity to really look carefully and glean information from what he or she is seeing. So it's wonderful to see that leap on the part of my students from the state of, oh, I couldn't possibly say anything about this work of art, it's completely closed to me, to, oh, I get it. This is so interesting. It's like reading Moby Dick, but it's a picture. I see how I can unpack it and understand it in a similar way.
I get the idea that every time you go in a museum, you're hoping to glean something.
Yes, absolutely.
That you may not have known, or
absolutely. I try not to go into a museum with too many preconceived notions, and I find that even the most familiar works of art, so a painting by George Innes about whom I've written, or a painting by Arthur Dove, a book on whom I've just finished, I make myself go in front of those pictures over and over again because every time I look, I see something new, and every time I look at those paintings with my students, they show me something new. Sometimes I feel the more I look, the less I know. And so students bring their fresh eyes to the canvases and help me see things that I haven't before. And I mean, that's one of the deep satisfactions of teaching, but it's also a lesson that I take very seriously, that one can never see everything in a picture.
You mentioned Arthur Dove, who was a contemporary of Alfred Stieglitz.
That's right.
Crystal Bridges, of course, has this. So Are you looking forward to going there and perhaps making some connections?
Or? Yes, absolutely. The Crystal Bridges has a wonderful collection of Dove work, many small-scale sketches, which are often difficult to see because they're not on view because of the condition of the object. So I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to go to Crystal Bridges and see these pictures. And one of the paintings is one that I actually haven't seen before. So this, for an art historian, this is extremely exciting.
So I don't mean to be simple, but take me through, what do you do when you, I mean, is it as simple as just walking up and looking at it?
Well, you know, I mean, at the risk of making art history as frivolous as President Obama described it as being, yes, it is. That's what I do. I walk up and I look. And I spend some time looking, and the next thing I do is actually sketch. I take out a notebook, and I could never possibly recreate any of the things that I look at. But I try. I produce a sketch and work my way through the picture by trying to render in a kind of notational form what I see. And it, in the same manner that I tell my students, writing is a form of knowing. As you write, illumination happens. The notating of the picture makes me look at it really, really closely and makes me see things that I might not have had I just been looking without doing the drawing exercise. And this is something that, and maybe it's because I'm a scholar of the 19th and early 20th century, but this practice dates to the 19th century. Students of studio art were told to draw, to go out into nature and draw so as to know it better. So for me, looking but also notating, I feel gets me into the picture and helps me imagine what it would have been like for the artist in his or her studio to be painting it and to be making the decisions, the choices that went into the finished product.
Rachel DeLue is an associate professor in the Princeton Department of Art and Archaeology. She talked to me late last month while she was in Northwest Arkansas to participate in the annual meeting of the Southern Intellectual History Circle. The group met in Arkansas for the first time ever late last month. Rachel DeLue is the author of several books, including George Innes and The Science of Landscape.